This week's Property Matters on Dublin South FM, the show that brings global trends to an Irish audience. You can contact us on Twitter at iPropertyRadio or by email at hello@iPropertyRadio.com. Your host today is myself, Carol Tallon. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, we're recording remotely, so apologies for any poor sound quality. Coming up on the show today, we'll be talking about property development, Ireland's new homes market, the art of property staging and why it's important, and we will look at Ireland's data centre sector. So first up, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Ronan McKenna, Sales Director of Glenveagh Properties. So Ronan, thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, not at all. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I appreciate that today is a particularly busy day because obviously the show airs on a Tuesday, but we're recording this on Monday the 18th, which is really D-Day for construction companies in Ireland. You know, we're back on sites for anybody. For any of the non-essential construction sites. So first of all, talk to me about how Glenveagh has responded to the COVID-19 challenges over the past 2 months.
Yeah, I suppose today is a great day for us in that we get back to doing what we want to do, but it's also a very cautious day because for the first time we're coming back and bringing all our staff back, and we want to keep the safety and well-being of our staff and at the communities that we're working in as paramount. So we've actually spent the entire 2 months planning for this reopening, and it's not a rush back. We're being very cautious about it, and we've put in place all the different measures that actually people have seen on RTE News today. We've hand washing facilities, social distancing, COVID officers, and a whole array of working the challenges of working, in a COVID pandemic, are quite great. And look, it's going to take time and people to get used to it, but we feel we've had a good start today. And I've been around a few of the sites, as have other members of the senior management team, just to make sure that things are bedding in well. And as I say, we're starting off. Typically, we've had maybe 30 men coming to site today, and we'll increase that over the next few days, on staggered times and all of that that comes with it. So it's extra cost, but it's essential to keep going.
Absolutely. And look, I think it's really interesting that we're recording this at a time when you have had the experience in the morning time of the sites opening up, because an awful lot of what the planning has been done, obviously the Construction Industry Federation and other construction bodies have been fantastic in helping the industry to interpret the HSE guidelines and to help them set protocols to return safely to site, and, you know, including the online induction training. But yeah, that's very much theoretical on the non-essential sites until today. So on a practical level, you know, have you brought back 100% of your staff?
No. We'll be phasing them back, and we have quite a large office of staff in Maynooth, and it remains closed, and those people remain working from home, except those who can do on-site support for the teams. So essential services from the office, we have some of them located in extra office cabins on site to support that. But it's the work that was done by the Construction Industry Federation, the PPI and others, we were involved in that process. They did involve the builders and developers themselves in it, to try and make it as practical as possible. Mm-hmm. And we had one site which was deemed essential because of the number of Part 5 units that we had to deliver on it. So we had one site back a fortnight ago, to try and work through the live examples of what might be challenges for us. And so we had a good insight into that. So that today wasn't as it wasn't as daunting as it might have been for some builders, because we had that little bit of foresight or little look into it.
And that's an important one, actually. So I suppose learning from the experience over the past 2 weeks, you know, are there particular insights that jump out at you maybe that, you know, you weren't expecting?
Well, I think in terms of how to get people in on site. So you have to, typically what we always did was we had a turnstile system and a biometric sign in and sign out. So you used your thumbprint or a fingerprint, and you typed in a code and you walked through a turnstile. They all became touch points, which we had to completely eliminate. So our way of knowing who's on site and when they're on site had to totally change. So instead of having people touching things coming in on site, we had to have them washing their hands coming into site, and a new protocol around that. We have a guy, a gate man, at point there, who signs every person in verbally, and updates the computer system from that. So the hand washing facilities then, they had to not have touch points on them as well. So it's a great system that the guys designed themselves, whereby the tap is used with your knee, and you turn on the tap with your knee, and your hand washing facilities are there, and then you move into site, and these are dotted around the site as well, so that there's hand washing all throughout the day. Again, social distancing, we were able to work out, like, there are some tasks that you do automatically that suddenly you realize, you're shoulder to shoulder with another man or woman doing them. Mm-hmm. So we had to see how we could do that differently by maybe using the teleporter for a particular job, or for holding up something, or, you know, all little things like that. The other things we had were like the number of people in a house at a time, the different trades. So now we have it. We don't ever have one person in a house on their own in case something happens. But now we limit it to one person upstairs, one person downstairs, rather than having a number of people in the house all working in different rooms.
Again, it's the implementation. All of the measures make sense. It's the implementation is going to show up where the real challenges are going to be. And obviously, there's a huge weight of responsibility for the members of the industry that are back working today, because we just need to get this right. You know, the next few months, and I suppose delivering the pipeline of work for the next few months depends on how well we get back to site in the next week and 2 weeks. And actually, in terms of the pipeline, you know, how many homes have Glenbay under construction right now?
Well, at the time of the close down, we had 1,200 houses under construction. Wow. So we have that, and that's spread over 19 sites. And we're working our way through those, and a lot of those sites, most of those sites have reopened. Some of them won't reopen until a little bit later, because they were very new. They were just opened up, and we want to get back and work through the stock that we have, and then we'll see what demands are there, because we now have to balance this with the demand for housing, which we think will be good. And certainly over the lockdown period, we've had a lot of interest in our virtual viewings. We've actually had quite a number of house sales.
Really?
Yeah.
And are these sales of built or homes off plan?
Well, they're homes off plan that have show houses. Yeah, they're not. We don't have very much standing stock. We just don't, because we sell ahead all the time, and because we have aggressive targets within the PLC system, your targets are always very aggressive. So we tend to have them sold by the time they're built, or we certainly try to have. You know, so
yeah.
So
it's interesting. It's interesting to hear that. A strong sales route there, because, you know, we look a lot at the technology around prop tech and construction technology, and we know that every part of the property transaction can be done online, including finding your property and viewing it. And what we really probably suspected, but I've really learned over this period, is that the culture, you know, the mindset hasn't changed to allow people to buy a secondhand property virtually, unless they're investors. But certainly for home buyers, no. and yet they do it for off-plan properties and for newly built homes. So, you know, it's interesting to hear how this pandemic, you know, will it change that for second-hand properties, or will it just be for newly built homes that we will actually be able to sell off-plan? But in terms of the strong demand, are you facing a situation where maybe you had properties sale agreed or deposits taken from people and their work and financial situation has changed in terms of accessing mortgages?
Yes, there are sadly some people who had intended to purchase a home who can't do that now. But it's not the majority, it's a minority of people. And that must be very difficult for them, because it's a very exciting time, you know, to be changing or to buying a new home. So that's very difficult for them. But we would have, I think, as we run our numbers, just close to 90% of our buyers are continuing to with the sales process. We had contracts signing all during the lockdown period. So, you know, we have been able to continue with it. And the housing market, you see, before COVID-19 arrived on our doorstep, Ireland had a housing crisis. That didn't go away. It didn't disappear because of this. Obviously, we all have to deal with COVID-19 as the priority, but the underlying demand for housing, it was never supplied. So, and people talked about 2008 and how it was going to affect, but the truth of it is, we were building 90,000 houses in 2008, and there was a huge supply of houses left. And the demand shrank. There is no, as I said to you earlier, we don't have standing stock. We don't have stock lying around. And we're not the only ones. You look at any of the builders, and I go around all the building sites, they don't have stock built, because everything that they were building was being bought and taken out of the list of available, if you like. So therefore, the supply just hasn't been there. And that's why I think that, and I know, you know, some people are very doomsday about, you know, house valuation and all that kind of thing. There just simply isn't a lot of housing stock there for it to fall in value. I think there are huge challenges. And before I worked with Glenveagh, I was an estate agent. I think there's going to be huge challenge with secondhand property. And a lot of my focus with the purchasers that I have going through the system at the moment are the ones who have houses to sell. I do have a concern there, because I don't know how you ask an estate agent and a couple or a person to enter into a home where people are living and do that safely. I haven't got my head around how that would work. I can see it in a show house. There's no problem. We can sanitize it. We can have it as a safe place. We can do a lot of things remotely. We have it now that the estate agent doesn't even need to open the door for you. They can do it with their phone. So we're automating the locks on the doors. So that's not a problem for us. It's people who are selling vacant property, either, you know, probate property or vacant property for whatever reason, that can still go ahead, because that unit can be sanitized and, you know, the people can go in and out of it safely. But for secondhand homes, I think it's a huge challenge, both for the occupants and the people who want to buy it.
Yeah, look, I think you're absolutely right. And we know from speaking to estate agents right across the country that there's a challenge now in terms of the secondhand properties and the secondhand market. And it's interesting to hear you being so upbeat about the demand, because, you know, I agree that the people who want homes will still want homes. But where I would have my concerns is that where the financial circumstances have changed, we know that the central bank has encouraged more stringent view as to not just in terms of the macroprudential rules, but we know that the main lenders now have actually stopped granting exemptions to those. So those restrictions, which were already quite tight, are just going to remain or get tighter. And I just wonder how that's going to impact people who have been furloughed from work or have had a lapse in terms of income. You know, how is that going to affect them in terms of their targets for their budget? You know, and I I obviously it's too early to tell. We don't know, but I would definitely have concerns. And I just wonder, in terms of the forecast for Glenbey, you know, where are you in terms of your targets for what were your targets for output for 2020? You know, where do you see yourself now? Are they going to have to be adjusted?
So because we're a PLC, our targets are very public for people, and they call it guidance to the market. And we've removed all guidance to the market at this time, because we just don't know, you know, we just don't know where those numbers will be or what it'll be. And until we get some sort of view in terms of getting back and getting back sending, like obviously we can't do any viewings or anything until after the 8th of June. So there's still a time to wait to test the market. We're still talking to people. We're getting an awful lot of inquiries, as I've said, and we're talking to our existing buyer pool. But until such time as we can actually get people into looking at houses, we're really not going to have a view of where we are going to be at the end of the year. But as I say, it is, from the people we're engaged with, some people are affected very badly by COVID-19, those in the hospitality industry and some other, you know, retail and service industry. But there are also a large cohort of people who have been either somewhat affected or not affected at all. And they will want to purchase houses too. So even though demand will maybe reduce, there will still be a housing demand, in our opinion anyway.
Well, of course, because output is going to reduce as well. You know, it's an interesting dynamic. And again, it really is too early to call what the likely impacts on output for 2020 for the entire industry is at this stage. But I think the next couple of weeks will tell a lot. So, Ronan, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll leave it there for now. Our thanks again to Ronan McKenna, Sales Director at Glenbey Properties PLC. We need to take a quick break now. Stay tuned.
93.9 Dublin South FM.
And welcome back to Property Matters on Dublin South FM with myself, Carol Tallon. You can contact us on Twitter at iPropertyRadio or by email at hello@iPropertyRadio.com. I'm delighted to be joined now by Natasha Rocca-Devine, Interior Designer and Staging to Sell Specialist at the Interiors Nerd Studio. So, Natasha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. I very much enjoy your show and happy to be here.
Well, I'm a fan of your work and I've been following very much because you're great at social media and showcasing the work that you do. And actually, there's a couple of points in terms of your social media and things like that that I'm really hoping that estate agents will sit up and take notice of, as well as, you know, people who are looking to sell. But look, let's start with, you know, 2020 interior design trends. You know, at the start of the year, we always make predictions. And then, you know, in light of the pandemic and post-pandemic restrictions that are likely to continue, are you seeing that these are likely to change?
Absolutely. I think mostly I've, you know, written a few pieces for the newspaper in recent weeks. And I think using the space as a multi-purpose space and zoning in our homes is going to become very prevalent. You know, like things like screens or multi-purpose rooms. So your office is now going to be your gym, you know, or your children's room might be their playroom. So adapting those rooms into, you know, multi-purpose spaces, especially people who are in shared rentals or have children or in properties, you know, where each room has to be used for different family members for different purposes. And then obviously, you know, from an aesthetic point of view, you have to create a space that isn't too bright, say if you're going to work there as an office or vice versa. So it's really important to kind of incorporate that in. And it's also made us challenge us, you know, it's made us think outside the box for our homes, you know, in ways that we never did before. Looking at it much differently, but also in a very practical way too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and this is something that we've covered actually a couple of times on the show, because we're recording remotely. You know, my daughter's 21. I don't have the same issues, but there's been a lot of toddlers in the background and young children in the background as we're recording. And, you know, one thing about the trends in recent decades have been more towards open plan. And I think this is probably the first time in modern history that open plan is being tested to the point of all family members trying to live within a contained environment while everybody's pursuing their own thing. So whether you have one or two parties working and you've got children pursuing hobbies and, you know, trying to homeschool in the background, I think that we really need to reimagine our space. And in fact, yesterday when I went out, for a walk, I noticed that in our particular area, there were four home improvement vans.
Absolutely. Because it's challenged us, you know, and it makes you think, you know, in terms of obviously when you're facing a room every day, you also notice the flaws and you're, you know, you're quick to get the painters in, you know, on an aesthetic point of view. But on a practical point of view, space is key. You know, I've lived in London, Los Angeles, Milan and cities, and I've always had, you know, for budget reasons, usually lived in very small apartments or shared flats. So I've always had to challenge my space. You know, I've always had to do that. And part of my job in staging is to maximize the space. So I think for me, I've always tried to, you know, have multi-purposes in each space. You know, it's a natural skill probably of me via my work, but I think it's forcing, as you said, all of us to look at it. You know, we've gorgeous homes, but are we maximizing these homes? You know, are we using the rooms? Because everyone has a dining room that they don't use, you know, with the lovely table and everything. But now, you know, that's going to be an absolute luxury room, you know, in moments like this. So it's just really making sure that we use our space. And also there's everything that's there is valid. You know, are these pieces of furniture relevant? Do we need all this clutter? You know, it kind of forces everyone to clear out as well, as much to add in as to also clear out. So I think it's a really exciting time in that sense. You know, obviously it is a very challenging time for everyone, and particularly people at the front line and who are sick. But you know, in terms of interiors, on that level alone, I think it's a time where we can look at things in a different way and be really practical and kind of challenge ourselves and hopefully move forward with something positive from this being at home every day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely given rise for a reevaluation of priorities for a lot of people. But absolutely. In terms of smaller space, is that a trend? Is that a trajectory we were on anyway? Because, you know, we see this rise in the tiny home movement. We see a move towards greater density, more urbanization. That generally means a move from maybe three bed semis to perhaps two bed apartments. So, you know, with smaller space, it inevitably requires, it demands much better design, because it's the only way that we can fit our lives into that. So is that a trend that we were starting to see anyway?
I absolutely believe that. As I said, I've lived and worked in different cities, so I've always focused on location, you know, for practical reasons. And then that would mean compromising on size. And I see that, you know, in places like Paris, it's been notorious, and London, that people would prefer to live central, so they're near, you know, the facilities of transport and closer to the city, you know, so they'll compromise on that family home in the suburbs. I think it's a natural innate thing in Irish people to want property. I think it's in our blood, it's in our DNA. Everyone wants to own the property, and myself included. I think it's something that we all love. So I think naturally we all go to the suburbs, you know, for price and valid reasons. But people now, I think, are seeing, okay, is it worth it to travel 2 hours a day, you know, to come in? And obviously for some it is, and you know, it's a very specific thing. But I definitely see a rise in central city living, you know, living in smaller muses. You see all of these beautiful homes, little cottages being renovated, you know, into these stunning homes. And it just means there's a lot of evaluation, there's a lot of critique at the beginning, there's a lot of planning. What is a space for, you know, what's the compromise? Because you can't have it all in a smaller space. So it's really challenging at the beginning, but it's also, you know, the benefit is that, you know, you may be closer to work. So, you know, it's kind of an offset, but I definitely think that will continue to rise in Dublin City over the next few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, that's really a global trend that maybe Ireland is a little bit late to the party at, but certainly it's coming. At the top of the show, Natasha, you know, I introduced you as an interior designer, but you're also a staging to sell specialist. Now, this is, you know, we've had staging in terms of property in Ireland over the past, you know, maybe decade and a half in Ireland, but it was never a prevalent feature of the market, whereas it might have been in other jurisdictions and in other places that you've lived. You know, so coming back to Ireland and launching a staging to sell business, did you find, was the Irish marketplace ready for that?
Well, I was very lucky that I had a launch event, and Owen Riley gave me my first job. So, you know, he obviously you know, enjoyed the party, and we spoke at that time. So, you know, I think sometimes it's just someone seeing something in you and giving you that chance. And, you know, Owen is a perfect example of an agent that sees the massive importance of staging, and he continues to with myself and other designers he works with. So I think it's just about probably right now, or back then a few years ago, it was about the agents and the developers who naturally would know, you know, immediately based on the sales price and the pace of sale, the importance of it. However, you know, I did RTE Find Me a Home. My project was on that, actually, with Owen. And I think, you know, via TV, via social media, via press, people are starting to see the importance of home styling. You know, all these trends on Instagram and all over the internet. So I think now it's become more of a public common knowledge to, you know, to make sure that when you're selling or renting your place, that the photographs are adept, you know, to what, you know, the price you're charging, and, you know, also to get the rent, sale or rental faster, you know, the quality of those photos or the aesthetics is going to, you know, encourage that, you know, people will come and see it more. So I think it's definitely becoming something that people are more open to, and even if it's just via themselves, they are going to invest in a paint job before, you know, they before they put it up for rental or for sale, whereas some people wouldn't have seen the importance of that given they wanted to leave that property or rent it out. So I think it's becoming more and more common practice, and I think social media has, you know, a huge part to play, because people see global trends, you know, via Instagram in particular and Twitter, that, you know, they want to have that standard, and we should have that standard. You know, our properties are beautiful, and the skills and workforce is incredible in the property industries and the construction itself. So, you know, it's really important. But, you know, and then similarly, I've worked with Hollybrook Homes and my Frank. I've designed a lot of show homes and apartments with them. And, you know, they would naturally, you know, hire a designer because they know the importance to get people through the door. Whereas the public, I think, are catching on, you know, naturally and more as the years and months progress.
Yeah. And it's a really important trend. It doesn't surprise me at all to hear that one of your early clients was Owen Riley. You know, he's been on the show before. He's an example of really leading best practice across a whole range of the business of a state agency in terms of technology adoption. And, you know, so that doesn't surprise me at all. That's exactly the type of innovative firm that we would expect to be pushing the boundaries and improving things absolutely. All the time. But staging is so much more than a nice to have, you know. So let's just take the example that was shown on RTE, Find Me a Home. You know, we know that in Dublin, property prices tend on average to sell for, you know, maybe 5 to 8% above market value. But, you know, the case that you dealt with on that particular property, it was a Docklands apartment. We know that the performance was better than average. Can you take us through the figures?
Yeah, so originally by the end of the property Owen took me on, we sold it for 11% higher than the original sales price, and also within 4 weeks, which is a rapid sale. You know, it's, you know, obviously Owen is incredible, and like that's all down to himself and his agency. Obviously my work highlighted the property, and, you know, the sales is down to himself. But at the same time, you know, it just shows, you know, one example of, you know, just, it was a rental before, so there was a lot of wear and tear. You know, a lot of people are experiencing that. They've come back from abroad, or they're living in London, they're renting out their homes, and then, you know, you're trying to either sell it or trying to move back in, and it's really worn. So there was a lot of, you know, trying to maximize that sale to, you know, create the biggest space possible, but also with a very limited budget to do it up, you know. And that's the part of staging, is that you're trying to redesign it in a very short way on a very limited budget, because it's not an interior design project, it's not a fit out. So it's a very creative process where you have to, you know, look for the unique selling points. And in that space, I found the view was very important. You know, looking out, it wasn't necessarily the view facing the canal, but it was still like a lovely view and quite bright. So I focused on that. And then the rooms that were small, I painted them dark, you know, to enhance that space and make it more cozy. So simple things like that is part of staging. It's looking at the USP, the location, the budget, and then like any project, you know, it's the priorities, because, you know, you can't do everything. And I think you just have to kind of make the most. And also for agents on, you know, listening, and like developers and the public, I think clearing and cleaning out is just such an easy and fast way to, you know, to make money and to like make any space look better, and taking great photographs at probably different times of day, you know, and with light and then maybe with dusk. It's nice sometimes. Some places look better in the evening. It just depends on the location. But, you know, very simple things that are not so costly can be a huge, you know, window clean, and then just carpet clean and, you know, just some fresh bedding. On a basic level, yeah. I think these are really important tips, which people kind of assume, oh, no, I have to put so much money in this and, you know, add so many things in. I actually disagree. I think nearly, if anything, I clear out a lot at the beginning and just focus on less is more. And I think that's a really, you know, good information for people to know that it doesn't have to be so costly. It's just more of a time factor.
Yeah. And look, I think that that's important at the best of times. You know, I have you know, I have been critical sometimes of the estate agency photographs that appear on After My Home, you know, and you might have things like a bed unmade or a pile of clothes at the end of the bed or, you know, like simple things like bathroom shots with the toilet seat up and, you know, just simple things that are very off-putting to somebody who's only looking as a first step at the property's photographs online. So, you know, there's lots of, I think, simple and, as you say, cost effective things. But, you know, this information is important all the time because part of a estate agency is marketing the property. But I think this is going to be so much more important for secondhand properties in Dublin and nationwide as we come out of the COVID-19 restrictions, because there are properties that will have languished on the market for a couple of months. You know, there will be sellers who are quite discouraged. You know, so there's definitely going to need to be a re-evaluation of property listings that went up maybe just before Christmas or just after Christmas to really get them ready to reintroduce them to the market. So can you maybe give just a few tips that don't require a lot of work that sellers or perhaps estate agents of secondhand homes could do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the best way to start is you wouldn't, thinking about it as what I do, is you wouldn't go to a job interview not well presented. So why would you put this property up not well presented, you know, on a very basic level? And I think, you know, so I look at the property the same, you know, from a styling point of view. I think a very good idea is to either get a floor plan or take photographs of each space and plan, you know, take those home or to back to the office and plan each space, you know, and go through each room and say, OK, what can we do here? You know, just kind of move around the furniture, think of ideas. I would probably, and then decide what's, make a list of what's going to stay and what may need to be added. Then obviously book a cleaning team and a window cleaning team. You know, those things are, you know, obviously you might have access to that via your company. They're very, very simple things. And then from there, I would say fresh bedding is key. Having the bathrooms, you know, just nice little plants. You know, I think everyone is very much into sustainability. So anything with nature, I would definitely add in. It just gives a hint, you know, of a more global causes. And then, you know, adding in a candle or two and some very brief accessories. And then I think if you've got a bigger budget, you know, thinking of, you know, electricals, could you change the lights? Can you get, you know, the carpets cleaned? Can you get painting done? Could you get a respray? Like, you can do kitchenrespray.com and you can just like get the whole kitchen done up and things like that, or adding in new curtains or blinds. But as I said, they're more of a bigger budget. And then I suppose last but not least, when, you know, you've decided what's important, what's not, and then all of those things, depending on your budget, a photography is key. You know, it's absolutely fundamental. Yeah. And even if it's a very quick photo shoot and it's a quick clean, put all the things in a drawer. You know, it doesn't have to be, if you don't have the time or the money and it's just literally in and out with the photographer, just put the things in a drawer or get a, you know, get a basin or a bucket and put them in for the photographs and put them back out. And, you know, put over kind of a throw over the bed if you don't have a chance, and two pillows, you know, just kind of do impromptu. Just think, you know, think quickly of simple things like that, and adding in candles. But the photography is key, and we all have access to phones. You know, it's amazing what you can do if you just practice wide angles and just, you know, just play around with it. And as I said, also at different times of day, depending on the property and the natural light coming in. But these are very, very simple things. And then I think planning, though, is very much part of that, because you're going to save a lot of time and money going back and forth of what should stay, what should go. But on a very basic level, buying a few throws, some cushions, a candle, one or two plants, and then getting a quick clean is just so, you know, so impressive of what, you know, the result of that.
Yeah, I presume this is something that, you know, whatever about for a home seller, you know, they will do this kind of to their own style, perhaps, but mindful that it'll be for buyers. But say for an estate agency, you know, are we living in a time where estate agencies really should have, you know, they should really have content themselves that they can move from home to home, you know, things that really lift. So whether it's a lamp or whether it's a throw or pillows, you know, at this stage, are we at the point where actually these are part of the tools of the trade for estate agents?
I think, you know, that would be a great suggestion. I just know because I have a few warehouses of furniture, there's a lot of wear and tear and breaking, you know, and that, and right. it's easier than it seems. However, absolutely, you know, if you have a spare room in the office that you can have a few lamps or throws in, and you know that you don't have access to a staging company, or it's, you know, there's just the budget's not there, then absolutely, you know, why not invest in a few plants, a few throws and things. I think that's on the very basic level. Obviously the staging that I did for RT and stuff would be, you know, electricals, rewiring, you know, at such a higher level, and blinds and things like that. But on a very basic level, why not, you know, if you have room to host them, and you know, you can, you know, you have access to a van or, you know, a Jeep or something to bring them in and out, then absolutely, you know, it's just the simple touches, and people appreciate that, you know. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I think for rentals and, you know, smaller kind of more lower end properties, why not, you know, that way it really doesn't matter. However, the job of staging specialist myself or agents is to create a lifestyle. So if I'm designing a penthouse, you know, for nearly $1 million, you don't, you know, you want to see a wow factor, you want to see new blinds, you want to see a pay, you know, like I need to create this lifestyle that's going to make you want to like take that mortgage out or put your money, your deposit down. So I have to create a complete scenario and a theme, which I usually do, you know. I create this kind of I've done like a Great Gatsby Art Deco theme. I've done a Giorno e Notte, like a day and night theme. So every, you know, for the higher end, I think you need more than that. But at the same time,
I think that's a great point though, that you are helping people to visualize the dream of the life that they're aspiring to. And Natasha, before we let you go, I know that you're offering free online staging and styling social media series starting next month. You're going to actually be showcasing virtual styling, and you might just explain how that's going to work.
Yeah, I was going to, obviously with my business has to adjust to the circumstances. So I want to offer online consulting and Zoom videos and, you know, for people all around Ireland, so I can help them, you know, even smaller, large scale, while, you know, the restrictions are hosted. So I decided to collate all my previous projects, starting with the project with Owen in Hanover Quarter for RT Find Me a Home. And essentially I've given some little kind of behind the scenes tips of the rooms and the, you know, just things like the balcony, how to clean it, what I actually did, which resulted in the sale. So I'm going to use case studies of projects that have been sold, obviously that have sold successfully. And I think it's much better than, you know, just giving you lists of things to do. I think you can see the proof is in the pudding, and these have actually sold faster and for much higher prices. So that will launch June 1st.
We look forward to that, and that's definitely something that I will share across our iProperty Radio and Property District brands, because I think this is really important for estate agents. And I think that over the coming months, as we reintroduce secondhand properties to the market, I think that these are little touches are going to be the difference between selling a property and not selling a property. So massively important. And thanks, my thanks again to Natasha Rocca Devine for joining us from the Interiors Nerd Studio. And I will, of course, share links to the free online staging and styling social media series that kicks off on the 1st of June. We need to take another quick break and we'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
93.9 Dublin South FM.
And welcome back to Property Matters on Dublin South FM with myself, Carol Tallon. We are, of course, recording from home as the radio station operates remotely in full compliance with government guidelines. So again, a quick reminder for just apologies for any sound quality issues that we might have while we're recording remotely. And thank you for your forbearance with that. So I'm delighted to be joined now over the phone by Gary Connolly, President and Founder of Host in Ireland. So Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me onto your show. Thank you.
Well, obviously, you're a regular guest, so most people will be familiar with Host in Ireland. But for those who aren't, you might just give a quick overview of what the organisation does.
Yeah, effectively, Host in Ireland is a co-opetition. We've brought together the largest hosting companies or data hosting companies in Ireland and the associated services companies that design, build, operate data centres in Ireland. And we do two things. We promote Ireland, bring data Because when you have a demand for data, you need the centers. And we also then nurture a whole ecosystem of people who want to export those services and skills around Europe. And I know you've many of those on your show regularly, the mechanical electrical design companies, the main contractor companies, and indeed the supply chain. So it's a very Irish thing, but we'll concentrate on bringing data here and exporting skills, which obviously is digital and data is without question the asset that's growing the fastest now and indeed pre-pandemic actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, Gary, I don't want one of the words you used there to go missed by our audience there. You refer to this as a co-opetition? A co-op of competitors, is that correct?
A co-op of competitors who we've worked on hard over the years. Drop your own ego. Drop your own short-term balance sheet. Drop your own desires for you to always be right, and come together. Find the ground collectively with us, and a little bit like Ireland and rugby, right? So Munster, Ulster, Connacht, and Leinster beat the bejesus out of each other on a weekend, and then they pull on the green jersey, and there's only one way and one route to score the try, and that's together. So it's harnessing that sort of collectivity in a cooperation way. We're 5 years old now, and we started with four partners in 2015. We've now 30. So whatever we're doing, we're doing it okay. And we found the Irish companies wonderful. Even the American companies who have headquarters here, once you set out with a desire to achieve a collective goal, it's quite extraordinary. Particularly, and this is a small thing, but a very relevant thing, is particularly when you give back checks to people when they're not really compliant. That's a very strong thing. And we've done that a number of times. We've asked partners that maybe this isn't the platform for them. We've asked them to leave effectively.
Yeah, and I can understand how that would happen. And unfortunately, in Ireland, you know, one of the downsides about doing business in Ireland is that it's such a small, certainly it's such a small industry, particularly on the design and build side. So this means that, you know, there are pros and cons. It means everybody knows each other, but actually, people are much more inclined to run into each other at a social event and have a drink rather than work together, you know, and it's kind of a funny dynamic that comes from being in quite a small insulated industry there. And, you know, that's the kind of mentality that we need to move beyond, and for people not to see competitors purely in a negative light, but actually sharing this common goal and working towards it together and sharing the resources to achieve a common goal that I suppose essentially it creates a bigger pie. So everybody's slice of the pie automatically gets bigger when the pie gets bigger.
There's two very distinct issues. There's two, you know, let's take somebody looking to invest into Ireland. What it's like somebody going to buy a car. And if they get different issues, if they're told different things about the car from different dealerships, and they want to buy a Volvo, and the four dealerships tell them different things, more than likely what they'll do is they'll buy a BMW. Because they're unsure, yeah. Right? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. So you get a consistent message for the guy who wants to buy the product. The second thing that we need to be more mindful of is Ireland is wonderful. We love it. We've got great dynamics. We've demonstrated over the last 60 years that we're wonderful negotiators. We're great salespeople and all the rest. But Ireland is 5 million people. And there's a commensurate level of work for 5 million people, no matter how well the economy is going. What we do is we collaborate with the large players to create a platform that allows them to go international. That's the key thing,
yeah.
Is to demonstrate that we, and right now, we would have Ireland and the main contractors, the designers, the builders, the operators, all the different aspects of a data center are without question. I mean, it's not even a question now. Go to Frankfurt, London, Amsterdam, the Nordics, and it's like being in downtown Blanchardstown. The skills that were learned, let's say, even before data centers, Intel, even before them, the pharmaceutical companies, they're all mission critical facilities that you have to know what the question is, to deliver the right answer, in the right time, in the right order, for the right price. And that's the wonderful thing about what we're doing is we go to Amsterdam very recently, only in January, and everybody wants to come to the Irish party. Why? Because they don't get that sense of, oh, I met him from X and I met him from Y. They seem to speak the same language and they're not bitching about each other. Because ultimately, irrespective, there's a great sense of camaraderie when you're away. So when you bring it back and you actually get it to operate, you know, that's not to say they don't beat each other up when the tenders come out, but that's a different issue. At least we have the tenders to have the
That's price. Really good. That's a great point, Gary,
So that's the key. That's the essence of hosting Ireland. The other thing is I don't work in any of the companies. I don't have any association, no directorships, nothing in any of the companies, which also gives a different spirit to an initiative where sometimes you see associations or you see this type of thing. And the guy that's the chairman or the guy that's the president is actually the top dude in one of the companies. So guess what? Mm-hmm. Right from the off, there's a certain, oh my God, I'm going to tell you all that, you know. So you got to get rid of you. Common sense. If you ever look at some of the LinkedIn stuff I do, I have a degree in common sense and I try and apply that to business as well.
Yeah. And look, that's the essence of it. And you talked there about the mission critical part of the goal, but actually it was interesting. Only maybe a month or maybe 6 weeks ago, I had a contractor, somebody working on the contracting side in Ireland, said to me, you know, how are data centers still open? How are they considered essential workers? And I was stunned by this. So what that told me is that there still is an absolute lack of understanding about, you know, we're being told to work remotely. We're being told to automate our systems. We're pushing prop tech and construction tech. And we're moving all of our essential services toward a cloud-based solution.
Yeah.
And yet there seemed to be this disconnect. So why is this essential? And I tried to explain that absolutely everything he was doing from his home office in the Midlands was being stored essentially by a data center. But that disconnect, and look, you know, that's not a criticism.
No.
It's more that, you know, it's a little bit like us walking into a room and turning on the light switch, you know, flicking the light switch without actually understanding what goes on behind the wall and beyond. So, you know, from that point of view, data centers being given essential worker status, that was inevitable, surely.
It was. I think now people have a better appreciation for the fact that when you look, and I suppose the word itself is not the best. A data center has two words that are merged together. And most people look at the center and they see a building. And they see a building without any windows, and they see a building without thousands of cars outside. So they immediately think that's like just a warehouse. Well, it is a warehouse, but it's a warehouse of data. And that's the second word in data center. And what is that data? Well, actually, what that data is Netflix, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Microsoft Office, all the products and services that people use daily, Spotify, you know, Maps, all the stuff, as you rightly say, people now more than ever have depended on these tools and services for their everyday life. That's the data. And the data is actually the key ingredient that needs to be kept up and running 24/7. Probably, as you say, the dependency is more than ever right now. Which is what? Mm. So it's more the data has the essential worker status, because that must be up and running. Indeed, then the data sits on a server, which is just a box, which sits in a bigger box, which is the data center. So, you know, far few people actually, you know, I used to use the analogy of you look at a cow in a field and you don't see that that's one of Ireland's largest exports. Because you just see a cow in the field. You don't understand what's behind that is an agribusiness. What's behind that is a load of workers, you know. So I think it's easy then just to throw and say, well, what good could be in those data centers? When we talk about the centers, then we talk about digital factories. And maybe that's what people should be thinking of them more like. Because the traditional factories, unfortunately now, due to social distancing and all the regulations, are closed in the main. The digital factories continue to function at up to 30% more demand, which means that there's 30% more exporting of services and products and monetization, money transfer into the Irish economy by the people in Germany or Estonia or France or wherever they are, buying the services that are on a digital factory in Ireland and crystallizing that. So these are all open, continue to open, and therefore the workers that work in them, obviously to maintain them, needed to have that critical status.
Okay. And Gary, can I ask then, in terms of delivery of new data centres, so we're looking at, say, the medical device sector or healthcare sectors, and at the moment they're being able to extend without going through the routes of, say, normal planning and things like that, given the times we're in. So does that apply to data centres, or where are we in terms of, say, new data centres in the course of delivery? So that are still at construction phase. What's happening to those?
Well, we mentioned the ones that are fully finished. They're fully operating. Second ones are, obviously, as with all other forms of construction, today, the 18th, is the day where we get the start of the process for external workers, or people working externally, as you know. So data centers are in have to comply completely, because ultimately it doesn't matter what the asset class is, we're still dealing with human beings. So it's to protect the human. So therefore, all of them, the main contractors, the mechanical, electrical people, or the site works people, return today. They're working in compliance with the rules and regulations of phase one. But the interesting thing, and something that we should note, is projects that were to start and commence in 2021 as part of master plans, many of those have been brought forward already due to the demand increase that I mentioned earlier, up to 30 to 35%. So
that's almost counterintuitive, and it goes against what's happening, say, across the other sectors where most things have been pushed out. You're saying that if these were in the planning, then they're actually going to go forward.
Yes, there's a distinct desire to bring forward a number of the master plan projects that were, say, 24 months away, are now going to be brought forward up to 18 months. It's just to deliver.
Do we have the capacity? Do we have the capacity to do that, in terms of not just kind of getting through planning, although we know that there are changes there at the moment, but in terms of, say, the supply chain, the workers on the ground, the skill set that's needed? Because this is a very distinct sector of the construction industry. So there's a number of key players who provide into this sector. But I presume it's not one that any contractor could just pick up and deliver on. So do we have the skill set? Do we have the supply chain ready to bring forward that level of construction?
Well, there's two questions in there that you're asking. One is the physical capabilities and the quality of the companies, right? And there's no question about it that the Irish companies have demonstrated, not just with data centers, and this is important. Why are the Irish companies recognized throughout Europe, whether it's Frankfurt, London, Amsterdam, Paris, the Nordics, as the go-to guys to deliver projects data centers? Well, actually, it's not necessarily over the last 20 years where data centers have become this established asset class. It goes right back to Intel in the 80s, or before that, it goes back to the pharmaceutical companies, the Pfizers, the Sandoses, and these guys. And therefore, it's ingrained in these companies to have a clean room in a data center is similar. A pharmaceutical manufacturing plant is similar to a data center. It's about the disciplines. It's about doing the right things in the right order. So in terms of their caliber, the second thing to remember is, and I think on some of your earlier shows, some other projects in other sectors, whether they be retail, whether they be hospitality or other sectors, are naturally going to, due to the demand, the supply and demand, potentially slow down, and some slow down considerably. So that leaves a capacity of people that we need to get back working. We need to get back with skills and services. And if you're working in one sector, you can, not say easily, but the one thing that we have demonstrated, and the one thing I know, and I'm not a construction guy, I know about construction people, is they're terribly resilient. They work on solutions to problems many of us haven't even thought about. So therefore, my sense is that with an industry like this that has an accelerated demand, in line with the Ireland's ability to deliver renewable energy. That's the key thing as well, is that you will see other projects or other subcontracted projects or other skills and services being brought in from capacity that maybe not recovering as quickly. And obviously, we don't have a timeline, because that's the key thing here, is that we must always, everything we do, and I think that's what we decided to do as a nation, put each individual human at the center of this. Of course, we could get going quicker on sites. Of course, we could build these things faster. But at what cost? What human cost? So obviously, the good thing about right now, as I'm on this call with you, is there's an industry here that we're good at. We've done it for 30 to 40 years, data. There is an accelerated demand on a number of projects. And now that's an industry that we can see a light at the end, when other industries, and I've only mentioned two, retail and hospitality, is less certain. So maybe some, what I'm suggesting is some of the capacity in those slower industries can be transferred across. And as I say, if there's anything I know about construction companies, and they're very resilient, they're very diverse, and they can change. That's my experience of this industry. I'm a data dude, so I look at these guys and how they do things in construction, and it amazes me often how resilient they are.
Yeah, look, resilience is definitely the key word that we've been using over the past 9-10 weeks of the shutdown. And I know this week is going to tell a lot as we go into this phased opening of construction sites. Yes. You know, so I think we're going to need all of the resilience. And I'm delighted to hear you describe yourself as a data dude, because then I can. So thank you very much, Gary Connolly, data dude, president and founder of Holston Ireland. Thank you for being with us today, Gary. That's it from us. And thank you, everyone, for listening into Property Matters on Dublin South FM, the show where property matters. You can get in touch with the show by emailing hello at iPropertyRadio or on Twitter at iPropertyRadio. Also, our thanks to Peter Rice on sound and show producer Katie Tallon of Hear Me Roar Media. We're back at the same time next week from myself, Carol Tallon, and all the team here. Stay safe.